Spirits of French Lick is proud to introduce the Lee Sinclair 4-Grain Bottled and Bond Bourbon. This 4-year-aged, double-pot distilled, non-chill-filtered bourbon has creamy, round, and lifting notes with caramel and vanilla, followed by apple, mint, graham cracker, and ginger, as well as cardamom. The finish is slightly French walnut, resolving the sweet, fruity, almost ground cherry and white pepper. Our spirits are available for tasting and purchase inside the French Lick Winery and Distillery. Spirits of French Lick. Respect the grain. Please enjoy responsibly.
Back there.
What's up, Scotchy Bourbon Boys fans? This is Alan Bishop of If You Have Ghosts, You Have Everything. You may know me better as Indiana's Alchemist of the Black Forest, but if you're at all interested in the Fortean, high strangeness, the paranormal, and the unexplained, then you should tune into my new podcast, If You Have Ghosts, You Have Everything. Available now wherever you get your podcast, including Spotify, Google Podcast, and Amazon.
All right, we're on the another Scotchy Bourbon Boys podcast, and we got a special podcast tonight. We have CT, welcome CT, and we have
I think you've lost your voice, by the way, but you sound like you're a little bit hoarse. Have you been at a game yelling at people and stuff?
Yeah, yelling at the refs. That's one thing that I do. We could talk about that a little bit, but we have Amin Carr from Old Louisville Whiskey Company in Louisville, and welcome, Amin.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, guys.
Amin, first of all, do you say Louisville or Louisville?
Louisville.
Louisville. Okay. Louisville.
It's a problem down there. Every time I go,
yeah. You gotta say it like you're drunk on bourbon.
Louisville. Yeah. Well, up here, what's even worse is that we have a city up here named the same thing, and they call it Louisville. So
too Frenchy up north there.
Yeah, whatever. It's wrong. I tell everybody they like to say things wrong up here. So yeah, I agree. Old Louisville. Right there. I can say it. That's one thing I can do. Some things I can't, but that's one thing I can do is say Louisville. Anyways, we're the Scotchy Bourbon Boys, www.scotchybourbonboys for all Scotchy Bourbon Boys merchandise. I'm tonight wearing the Scotchy Bourbon Boy t-shirt. We have Glencairn's, and then also we have Bourbon Balls. So everybody check that out for all things. You can hook up with the podcasts. We have over 330 episodes, and then also check out our bios right there online. And then follow us on all the social media, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and X, and all the podcast formats. But like, listen, subscribe, and leave us good feedback no matter what. All right. So I got that done quick tonight. And CT, yes, you did notice that my voice is hoarse. I don't, the game was on Sunday and it's Tuesday, right? I had no.
This would be the best podcast ever because your voice is not there, so you're not going
to. You have to shut up, right? You're going to have to do all the.
CT, thanks for the bourbon bowls.
Oh, you know you're welcome. I left them in Ohio accidentally with my license plate.
So he threatened that he was going to bring them to you and then didn't.
Well, it didn't happen.
Does he usually do that?
I'm going to tell you what.
Obviously.
Bourbon balls, they're going to be the stupid white chocolate ones because that's ridiculous. Nobody should have white chocolate bourbon balls. But when Jeff makes them, I take those and give those to select individuals. The chocolate ones are gone.
So, they're like chocolate.
Yeah. Oh,
the dark chocolate. Cocoa.
Your chocolate.
Chocolate is bullshit. The white chocolate bullshit ones you can have. I'll bring them to you.
Yeah, they're good. CT's a little bit nuts there, but that's okay. He got a pack of nine. He got a 6-3 ratio, and he's still complaining.
One of these days, mine will have dark chocolate all throughout, and it'll be a special one for me.
So we should be coming down. I mean, I think our Christmas party's Friday, December 15th, and then that Saturday we're going to head back down towards Chris's area in Springfield, pick up something, but then we're headed down to Kentucky, and I'd love to be able to stop by and actually see your place personally. I know CT's been there twice already, and then also be able to, with you, taste your bourbon, finally for the first time. We were just talking about how you let your bourbon, you know, talk for itself, and your whiskey talk for itself. And I totally respect that. But I feel like Chris was just making, you know, I felt like Chris was being a total asshole because that's what you do. And then somehow he deprived me of all whiskey on this podcast. So... So now we're gonna.
I promise you, I will email you the overnight label I gave it to him.
I'll forget the overnight label. Wait a second. Give me an overnight.
Yeah, he did. You're just lying at this point. You probably sent it to somebody in California.
Hey Jeff, what's worse is this is just the little bottle. The big bottle I poured it into here. So that's what you get. So sorry.
I'm used to the abuse.
Yeah.
It, what's worse is the six barrels that came back, two of them were full. That's where this came from.
Nice. So what's the dates you're coming down? Yeah.
It would be either Saturday, you know, afternoon on the 16th or sometime on the 17th, which is that Sunday we're still. And I would head
December or?
Yes, in December.
All right. Well, make sure you get my number from Chris. And if he doesn't give you your number, just make sure you reach out to me so you get the number.
Yeah, we're friends on Facebook. I'll messenger you if he doesn't give me the number. And that's, you know, today, I swear to God, right after we hung up on the phone and we were talking, and he's like, I wasn't able to get the samples out, and, you know, and then he just hung up and just said, too bad, too sad, because he loves it so much, he just wants it all for himself, and I can tell on this one.
I do. So the bad thing is on the 16th, when you get down there, I'll be on the bottling line bottling for Amin, so I'll already be there.
I don't believe you for one second. It's like that's a Saturday the 16th. You've already told me that you're not going to. Well, we're going to be in the area, and you said you might not even be able to see me.
Well,
it's a surprise.
Wait,
it's going to be a surprise.
Yeah, it was going to be a surprise, but no. Oh, well.
All right. Surprise me. It'd still be a surprise because I just don't think that's happening. If that happens, I will be surprised. You could be bottling and licking the back of the stickers and putting them on the bottles.
Well, you don't have to lick them. They're already.
I know. Anyways. All right, CT, get this started. I mean, you all know.
So. First, a backstory. So we got to tell the backstory because, I had seen your product different places because everybody knows that I like to come to Kentucky almost every Friday. It's like my day off. I come down to Kentucky. I like to go to different parts and meet different people. And I've been fortunate to meet some great people and have a good time. I saw your stuff all around. I think I was in Lexington, Louisville a couple of different times, and I saw the product, didn't know much about it. And I'm at Bardstown Bourbon Festival, and Jeff and I were helping set up the festival. I think Nash was there at that point, maybe Carl, and we were just helping everybody set up. And Stacy comes over and she said, hey, she wheels up on her golf cart. And she's like, "Hey, can you help me out?" And I'm like, "Yeah, you know, whatever. What do you need?" She's like, "Well, I just need help moving, helping somebody set up." And that was the first time I met you. We wheeled over there. Stacy dumps me out of the golf cart, and we moved some barrels to set up in your display. And it's kind of, I feel like that's the bourbon community in a whole. You know, we meet people of kind of the oddest ways, but connect like you've known somebody for way longer than you have. And we met each other again at Bourbon on the Banks in Frankfurt, and we were going to do a podcast then, but we got so busy and it was just not enough time to do it. But I'm actually glad it worked out this way, because I feel like we can concentrate a little more on the brand, and now being able to be there and try it, I am just I'm blown away. I wish I had drank it sooner, but at the same time, it's kind of nice because I feel like I found this bourbon whiskey that's out there that I didn't know about. So tell us a little bit.
Thank you for volunteering at KBF. Like, not a lot of people realize how many volunteers help the Kentucky Bourbon Festival and a lot of festivals.
Yeah.
To be those type of festivals that we brag about them around town. But yeah, tell you about what?
Wait,
tell us about,
hold on. I'm going to respond to that. I wish it would have worked out the other way, because then I would have been drinking the whiskey too. All right. And then I also do remember she actually dragged both of us over there. If you remember, I hopped on that cart too. And I mean, that's where we did meet. I met you momentarily. Chris hopped out, and he was, and then he had it, and you were setting some stuff up off to the side, and we introduced ourselves, and then I got dragged back by Stacy to start the table thing while you kept helping him. So that was good. I do specifically.
Yeah, I'm usually very good with faces, but I'm terrible with names. Like, you have to tell me your name a few times before I, like, you know, register my brain. But if I see your face, I'm like, I met you. Like, yeah, I met you.
Well, and then also that's why I call myself. That's why you know me as Tiny, because when people meet me in person and then the name is Tiny, it makes sense that it just sticks in their brain. If I said my name was Jeff, you wouldn't remember. You'd have to, like, you won't even remember after this podcast. But the next time you see me, you're like, Tiny. That's just the way.
Tiny,
and same
up,
thing.
Man?
But I'm the same with names too. I think I called you Armin, and then Chris is like, "No, Amin." so yes.
So Amin, go ahead. No, the barrel that we pulled out of your vehicle the first when we were setting up that was painted, that I saw at the store. What was that? What was the significance of that barrel?
So we sponsored an artist last year with Bourbon with Heart. So we sponsored an artist that did the barrel, and we didn't actually pick the artist. We basically were like, we're going to sponsor this barrel, and whoever artists get to paint it, that'll be it. And it happened to be an autistic artist, which is very touching, because he's an artist or have art out there. And we're very glad and very happy that, he was able to put a touch on it. So we brought it to the KBF as like a showpiece, so to show support to him as well. So we wanted him to get an exposure at the Kentucky Bourbon Festival. So,
yeah, and that's the barrel that you see when you walk in your front door. It's smack dab right in front of you as soon as you walk out the door.
Yeah, beautiful, beautiful art.
Yeah. So cool, so cool. So I think the thing that we need to start off is, like, we now know how we met and how Jeff and I met you and Tiny and I met you. Tell us more about what got you into the bourbon world. Where were you at? What got you doing this? So
Go ahead.
And why do you call yourself Old Louisville? You know, just the whole name and everything. Give us the whole thing.
Yeah. So you get asked that question every day, right? And I'm like, how did I get to this point, right? But it's kind of like funny how things play in your life. I lived in Louisville for 20 years. I moved here in 2003. And I worked in the service industry as a server, busser, bartender, barback. And I obviously got introduced to bourbon, and it's become, the drink of choice. You drink bourbon, right? You go out, you drink bourbon. You don't drink vodka. You don't drink anything else, gin. So 20 years ago, I got introduced to bourbon, and without thinking about it, fast forward, I went to college, I went to engineering school, I worked for corporate as an engineer for 10 years, and then I was like, you know what, I am done with this. And I quit one day, and I bought a liquor store in Old Louisville, which is the original city, the historic district of the city of Louisville. And this is 2015, late 2014, early 2015. So I learned a lot more about whiskey than you can imagine. You're owning a liquor store. You never ran a liquor store. So you have to put, you know, everything, learn about distribution, salespeople, different distributors, different brands, different categories of each spirit, and you name it. So I learned a lot there. And at that time, a year and a half ago, or a year and a half forward, I opened another store downtown Louisville. You know, I was like, well, how am I going to expand further without, you know, having a big, deep pocket? So I'm like, well, that's probably a good idea to like focus on what you enjoy and what you like, and let's steer that to your daily life. So that's how I ended up starting a brand and going with Old Louisville, because I learned everything about whiskey. I learned everything about spirit, specifically bourbon, and I also made some cash running my store and making some profit. So this is what funded the brand.
So we talked about it a little bit before there, and Andy just commented. He said, you need to have your shades on. Shut up, Andy. They're in the truck. But no, you know, I don't think people understand what it takes to start this. So, and I was kind of shocked when we talked about it there that day. This was the first time we met. How many barrels had you purchased before you even had the ability to have Old Louisville? Like, you had bought them, and they're sitting there waiting on you.
Yeah. So 2016, I believe, I bought my first V-barrel. I bought them from MGP, the old LDI, or people know it as the Seagram Distillery in Indiana. And the salesperson didn't want to answer my calls after that because I was too small. So I bought 3 barrels. I'm like, this is how I'm going to start my business. I bought them and I sit on them. They're now 17 years. They're sitting behind me. They're still there. They're still aging perfectly. I'm monitoring them every other month. But yeah, I started very, very small, and that was the goal. I was like, as I was learning about the business and what's going on, and I'm like, okay, well, I told my wife the worst case scenario, I'm going to have plenty of good whiskey to drink. That was my business plan.
I was going to say, because you weren't guaranteed that Old Louisville would even come to fruition, right? I mean, this is
actually 2016, we didn't even have a name at that time. We're like, yeah, it could be a company someday. But then when we got really serious about it, we were like, all right, we're going to sell what we have to fund it. And we're like, what are we going to call it? and we got serious about it, and we talking about trade name and such, and we're like, well, we learned everything. We made our money in Old Louisville, and we checked the, you know, the trademark office, and there was nothing being used as Old Louisville in the whiskey industry. There's Old Louisville Brewery. There's Old Louisville Neighborhood, but nobody have used Old Louisville as a whiskey company. So we're like, well, great. That's awesome. But then you apply for that trademark, and it takes you a year and a half to 2 years, and you're just waiting. Somebody could have said, no, you can't have it. But luckily, we did lock that trademark. So.
And then once you lock the trademark, then you still have to get the ability to open a facility and distribute.
Yeah, we actually did that before we locked the trademark.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So we did that. We started it.
How many barrels did you have when you first started? Like, how many had you bought pre-anything even being done? Like, you had, before you could actually sell a bottle, how many barrels had you purchased?
At that time, this is, we're talking about August 2022, I probably had 150 barrels.
Wow. Yeah, you're, when you said you're all in, you're all in. Because
yeah, so at that time, I had two stores. I already sold one of the store and put all the cash into barrels. And I was like, yeah, I'm in. So
that's awesome.
So there's a lot of liquor store owners out there, right? That own liquor stores. I mean, lots and lots. Yeah. So why do you think, from the standpoint, there's not a lot of them that end up with their own brand, you know, and becoming blenders. Now I'm drinking, I picked Johnny Walker Blue tonight because one, it's probably one of the premier Scotch brands as far as perception in the world, right? And I wanted to be drinking something good, but also I wanted to kind of draw the comparison between, because there's a lot of people who are like, well, if you're not distilling and, you know, you're forming a brand, are you really forming a brand? And they're just so, what would you say? It's a naivety of whiskey that they don't understand that, you know, Scotch has a 1,000 year head start on bourbon, you know, in 1600, but when bourbon in the late 1900s defined itself, Scotch has had distilleries for 600 years. And this is what now you're purchasing from MGP. Right, solely at this point, or are you picking up barrels elsewhere?
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
You still loading them and heating them up with all your single shit you've been dropping. You feel me? Loading them up on. It only takes structure. And you know, just paying attention to the climate of the game.
Yeah.
Know what I mean?
So do your homies got a role in your little, you mean?
Yeah, we all artists over here, man.
Y'all
trying,
already?
Yeah, I'm trying to get them on there. Yeah. We all artists, man. We go, you feel me? We going to have this like,
bro, me and my man Kai, we be like, I don't know, we play with this shit.
Don't
right
play
now.
With this
I got like, we play with this shit right now for real.
Don't play with it. Take that shit seriously.
I do want to find quality barrels, and I can afford them. I am picking up some Kentucky distillate.
Excellent.
But the majority of my barrels are actually MGP.
Right, right. But when you look at like a Johnny Walker Blue, one, it was a grocery store, whereas similar to what you were doing, you were a liquor store, and then they started a brand where they would buy, an actual grocery store back then sold whiskey from barrels, and then they would sell from the different, you know, Scotch makers or even Irish, and then mix their own blend, and then everybody loved what they were doing. And that's very similar to what you're doing. You're buying MGP barrels that have been distilled. They're different ages, and you're taking advantage of that. and then distilling, and then you're blending and then bottling it right there for people and then selling it. And that's very unique in this industry at the moment. Now there's a lot more people doing that, but for someone like today, we were talking about, there was a question, and it had nothing to do with specifically with this podcast, but the guy was like, well, I don't think there should, you know, there's so many brands popping up. You should have to distill. Why should you just be able to make your own brand? And I'm like, because that's the way. Just there's one thing, making good distillate. You have to have good distillate. But just because you're a good distiller and you make good distillate doesn't mean that if you don't put those barrels together properly, that it's going to be good tasting whiskey. You have to have somebody that knows what whiskey's supposed to taste like in many different palates. As you know, just there's, I'm sure when you're blending and you're doing stuff, you're making good whiskey that tastes good. But you also know when you make a blend that a certain sect of people will like that, what you can taste, they're going to like it, but it might not be your favorite, right? And so it's all about good whiskey and marketability of good whiskey. And that's something that a blender like yourself really takes in, you know, and can produce some really good stuff for people. And that's what I think, that's what you're doing.
So, I mean, maybe I'm wrong in this, but I feel like your strength is not necessarily always blending, but more barreling. Is that, would I be wrong?
No. I think you guys both on a good track. So there's three big components of whiskey making. You got fermentation, distillation, and maturation. So if you have those three, right? So if you know how to ferment and you know how to distill, you better know how to mature your whiskey. Or if you master one or two of them, then you let other people do the others. So for me, as a blender or rectifier, we call them rectifier in the United States. We rectifier spirit. So you bring me your bulk spirit, and I can rectify it. And this has been done for over 150 years in the U.S., specifically in Kentucky. Kentucky, Pennsylvania, Maryland. If you look at the history of distillation in North America and history of distillation here in the U.S. So being able to ferment, there is a big science part of it. Being able to distill is mainly how big your equipment, how efficient your equipment are, in what style of whiskey or spirits you're distilling. Is it pot still? Is it column still? But when it comes to whiskey, because it's really, when you dig into whiskey and whiskey drinkers, they're not just looking for spirit to consume. They're looking for a story. They're looking for art. And I think the third one is the maturation, and the blending comes into play, where you can actually take the same distillate that was fermented the same way, distilled the same way, but the way you mature it and blend it, that's how it's going to differentiate you from anybody else.
And that's something you do. So your tours, which people listening that haven't seen or heard of your tours, you take people through a tasting that allows them to taste what something, even in, let's just say an MGP 7 year, that it is, it's been an MGP for 7 years. You put it in a white oak, and then you'll put it in a French oak, and be able to show the comparison of what that does to the flavor. And I had no idea how big of an influence the difference was. I had no idea the difference in cost of a barrel, but you hit it on the head that, you know, like a white oak barrel is this much, but a French oak barrel is way more. And I had no idea the time. And that's something that I think that you brought to the table that I've not heard anybody talk about. So tell us about that a little bit.
So that's what the maturation knowledge comes about, right? So I didn't invent the wheel by any means. This has been done before me, but this is like the stuff we know that works well. And we experimental with the barrels we have and the whiskey we have. But you have to do certain things to create good whiskey, right? So if you have a good base of fermentation, you have a good base of distillation, and then you let the whiskey mature to the proper age, because young whiskey is young whiskey. We all know that. So playing with different oak is going to give you a different complexity, going to give you a different flavor, aroma, lingering, you name it. Like these, you can take white American oak from the Ozark, and you can take white American oak from West Virginia, and you put the same distillate in them, in 7, 8, whatever the age you decide on, you take them out of the barrel, they're going to taste completely different. The soil is different. The minerals are different from the trees. You can only produce pretty much a couple barrels from one oak tree that's been growing for 80 to 100 years. So it's very amazing how much the oak is importing, and people don't touch on that. Typically, they don't, you know, they don't focus on that. And I think that it's very important that 70 to 75% of your flavor of bourbon comes from the oak, and nobody really talked about it. So that's kind of like what I focus on when it comes to my tours and tasting is, well, let's learn about why are actually the flavors are different. We're putting the same distillate. And sometimes we take distillate that's already 6 years old, and we moved it to another barrel, and 6 months later, it's like, whoa, what happened here? You know? So it's pretty amazing to understand and focus on what nature is given to the flavor of bourbon.
CT, talking to Macaulay, and then also talking to Ashley Barnes, when you get into French oak, you were referring to the difference of French oak, the terroir of the different forests in France. So they're everything coming from France, the oak, but the different areas produce different tastes based off where the barrels are made. And then a lot of times when we're dealing with the French oak on, let's just say, the different cask finishes coming from the wines from France. One of the things that when the wines are coming, you're getting a barrel from France of one of the different wines, it's French oak. I mean, you don't say that it's a cab finished in French oak. It's just that you already know that. And that's one of the reasons why those casks, opposed to getting something from an American white oak out of California, it's going to be different than getting the same, you know, type wine, you know. And then also, like, it comes down to the grapes that are used and everything. I mean, it's so intricate, and we're just starting to get into that. And that's what he's talking about. That's what he's trying to tell everybody.
Amin was talking about the difference in cost and the cost of a French oak barrel because of the time that it takes to, you know, like we were saying, 50 to 80 years, I guess, is a white oak. And now we're getting into Chinkapin and all these different oaks because they're trying to find different oaks in the United States. But a French oak has so much longer of a tenure alive before they cut it down and make it that it's so expensive. And I think that that's like you just said. I mean, people don't realize that there are so many different brands out there. I mean, you can name 50 of them that don't make their own distillate, that use another brand. But what you do with those barrels, the different barrels that are available to you, is quite unique. So talk about that brandy barrel that you've got behind you.
Well, I can't talk about it unless I get a pour.
Go get a pour.
Get a pour. Yeah.
Live on the podcast, the 1948 brandy barrel.
Yeah.
There you go.
Well, he's getting a pour. I just Andrew's watching, so I wanted to show Andrew this.
Andy, is that your lighter? I told you Jeff stole it.
I did not steal it. It was left on the table, and my wife put it in the bag. So Christmas time, you get a little bonus because your lighter's coming back to you. You might need more lighter fluid, though.
Hey, I'm back.
Where are my samples of the brandy barrel? I don't have that.
Same where my samples are.
You have to come back this weekend.
Hey.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll be sending my my address. Just send them to me so I can drink them without letting.
Make sure you send your prescription and a jug with it so we can fill it.
Yeah, I definitely. I got one filled out by Remus, so.
Hey, guys, so I'll come by 1948 cask. Very special cask came from Spain. And very special distillate that went into it from our loving land here. So the whiskey was distilled as bourbon. Follows every rule to be a bourbon. This is 2015. There was a big shortage of American oak. A lot of people are like, what? We don't have trees here in North America? No, it's not the case. It was an inclement weather. The man was peaking. An inclement weather that couldn't log enough, so we couldn't harvest enough white oak in the industry. So what happened to a lot of distillate went into used barrels. So in 2015, this bourbon went into used barrel. When it turned 8, we moved it into brandy cask. These brandy casks were actually made with American oak in 1992. They held sherry wine for 17 years, but then they held, because they were good casks, they were holding 1948 brandy distillate for the last 13 years. And this brandy was bottled last year, 74-year-old brandy. And I think they blended it, but the cask was holding 1948 distillate, Spanish brandy, but was also made with American oak. So American oak can produce a lot of good, if you season it long enough, it produces really good quality barrels that you can hold. High quality wine, high quality brandy in them. But now we took 8-year distillate that's supposed to be bourbon. There was no good bourbon barrels available in 2015, mid-2015. They went into ex-bourbon barrels. They were aged for 8 years. And then they went into... Did you guys lose me? I think I have a
No, we got you. We're here.
And then they went into that brandy cask. So we were talking about very, very unique.
Delicious.
If you plan to do or produce this whiskey... And you do this, you plant it, you're probably not going to be able to do it. This is M-plant. This is how I ended up buying these barrels, because they're like, well, it's bourbon distillate made by a distillery I trust. I'm going to buy these barrels and I'm going to gamble. And then these casks came available, and I took my whiskey, put them in these brandy casks, and now we have this amazing... pour that I think, Chris, you tried it. Many people we tried it. We just released 88 cases, not much. Our production is very, very tiny. Again, we do everything by hand, and these are available in Kentucky only right now, but we have a few casks, and hopefully by January or February, we're going to be available in Ohio, so we can send a batch to Ohio as well.
That would be fantastic.
That brings up a good point, because I hear people all the time talk about, well, it's not available in Ohio, and it's not this. And so Ohio obviously is a control state. There's only some things that are available. But the thing I would tell anybody listening or watching is that your tour is available to anybody from any state. They can come down. They can do your tour. The other thing that you offer that's very unique is that you're not only going to taste six barrels and different wood finishes and whatnot, but at the end of it, you have the opportunity to bottle your own, and you can take a bottle, whether it's this bottle, which is the one to your left, my right, standing vertically. You have the choice to do that, and you can take it home with you. So, you know, for people that can't get it, I mean, it's from where I live near Columbus, it's a 2.5-3 hour drive to Louisville, and you can do your own. So if you're hearing this, seeing it, and you're like, man, I really want to try it, but it's not in Ohio, go on a tour, you know, come down and see.
Yeah, yeah, we would love to see you guys here if you're listening, and if you have the ability to come down here and drive, please do. We'd love to have you here and teach you a little bit about what we know, and maybe you can teach us something if we don't know it. And we can taste some good bourbon, and it takes, you know, 45 minutes to do the tour. We go through six expressions. Yeah.
So
down.
The one that Jeff doesn't have. Real quick,
you mean all of them?
If you move your camera, over to your right, my left, What is that barrel over there that this is a pour of?
The Nectar?
Nah, it's the Seldom.
Oh.
Go to the other way.
Yeah.
So, see that, Jeff? The Seldom Scene Farms?
Yeah, I've been to the maple syrup farm.
Hey, well, this is an eight-year maple syrup barrel. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's
let me go grab the bottle so I can show you.
So this one he's actually bottled and it's going out, he'll tell more about it.
While he's getting it, he was talking about that 2015 distillate that went into used barrels. That's why Chicken Cock Double Oak is exact same story. It's probably similar distillate. And like, it was a surprise. It wasn't planned. And the way to fix that whiskey, he fixed it very similar than that, the way that, Greg Schneider did. So it's, you know, once again, we talk about, it's one thing being able to distill. It's another ferment. Also, then it also maturation, and there's so much that could go into maturation. You know, he talked about the barrels out of West Virginia or where you're buying your barrels. It's so unique from each one, and it's gonna. But then, you know, I agree with everything that he's saying. But then his palate, Amin's palate, that is a key to almost every single distillery, in my opinion. If you don't have anybody, you even talk about people at Heaven Hill. You talk about a woman who can, what was her name? Tunney? Anyways, it's not coming to me right away, but she can taste all the bad stuff that is in a distillate. If there's bad stuff there, she can, if the barrel's not what it should be. But, you know, I mean, you basically, I imagine you just don't go buy the barrel and have them ship whatever. You pick and choose what you want. Do you get to taste the barrel before you buy it?
So, yeah, you can pull samples out of barrels that you want to purchase.
Okay.
And they're, you know, and then you decide. Because, again, when you purchase in or procure in these barrels, you either know what you're doing or you don't know what you're doing. So you can buy barrels distilled by MGP. By MGP uses 4, 5, 6, 7 different cooperages. And I can guarantee you the flavor that comes from one cooperage is completely different from another.
Yep.
And if you...
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
So right now, if you look behind me, is the barrels on top is our barrels that we are laying down right now, and we filling them here in house. So we're going for literally the most expensive quality barrels in the industry, because we believe those are going to deliver the flavor that we actually need in 8-10 years from now. We're making sure the oak is seasoned. We're making sure we can actually control the entry proof. We can making sure that the oak came from the trusted source that actually seasoned 12 months, not just saying it's 12-month season or 24-month season. Like the next batch, we're guaranteed a 24-month seasoned oak. And we can touch, if we have time, we can touch on that as well. But seasoned oak is very, very important. Like good quality barrels comes from seasoned oak. A lot of people, you know, ask why the 1980s, 1990s, 1970s bourbon tastes better. Well, there's few reasons. First is the distillate was made out of non-GMO grain. Second was limestone water we cut our distillate with. And we also go with seasoned oak. Demand wasn't there, so the oak was sitting in the yard getting seasoned from Mother Nature. And then fourth is the low entry proof. So if you combine those four, if you know how to distill and ferment, if you combine those four, you're going to create beautiful whiskey.
So that's very telling. And, you know, that's one thing that now that I've been associated with the industry for the last 4 years, and I really start to understand. I love the history. Okay. Like you talk about the '70s and younger bourbons and older bourbons and whatnot. But what really always amazes me is that the market, as you just said, also controls the history. There's up and down periods. And like you just said, in the period when nobody was buying and they had these stocks, these overstocks, because that everybody was buying up into a time and they were trying to meet the demand. When the demand fell off, you're 5-6 years of making the demand and it falls off. And then what do you do with that? All that whiskey starts to sit and age longer. So then back then, you know, to let whiskey age 10, 12 years, bourbon age 10, 12 years, most of the distillers didn't like the oak, you know, what it was picking up in that oak. It's not like scotch, which is can age 13 in used barrels. It's most of them are aging. A lot of scotches are aging in used bourbon barrels. In a used barrel, you know, and the same thing in colder climates, like a 20-year Canadian whiskey can be really light. But when you're aging in brand new charred oak barrels, the whiskey's going to mature fast, and either you need to get it out of it or, as it goes, a lot of those palates, they didn't like it. But now, you know, now as we go, and this has become such a much bigger thing, people are demanding more age, like a 17 or a 20 year, and they want it because their palates have evolved to a certain extent. There's so many people and they drink it older. But like you said, that time period produced some damn good whiskey, even though there wasn't a lot of people drinking. So it's in the bottle. And then like people like Brad Bonds is that it's almost like plentiful out there for him to pick it up because everybody had it, but nobody was drinking it. Right. That even the people that purchased all the decanters, they all were drinking clear spirits through the '80s. It wasn't like they were just going back to their bourbon. It wasn't cool to drink bourbon. Right.
Yeah.
So, and nowadays there's so much and people are trying to get it. So there's younger whiskeys and people are trying to rush this to meet the demand. And then there's a lot of shortcuts or whatever you want to say. And they're trying to keep up with the volume. And that's a hard thing to do when you're talking about an aged product. But what this is doing for the industry is now all the rundown brands, the brands that have been lost, the names and the rundown, the distilleries that have been gone to ruins because it's such a boom. People are purchasing them and restoring them. So what time period you're in this whiskey business, right, is almost like your responsibility. You know what I mean? You have a responsibility to the industry that just is timeless. It's always good. Though these spirits will just be made, but during the different times, there's different, what would you say, ways of procuring the whiskey so that it stays the test of time, correct?
So I'll tell you, history will repeat itself. So we're going to overproduce as an industry to meet demand, and hungry people will go and try to make quick buck. And if they're not passionate about the industry and if they're rushing to put young whiskey to make quick buck, they will get tired of it. And the consumer will tell them, we don't want you anymore in the market, and they're going to exit. We're going to see people exiting the market. And then the people that are doing it passionately and doing the quality always sustain any of these ups and downs in the market. Quality is quality. Doesn't matter.
Right.
My grandma was very, very poor, and she will tell us, you have to buy quality things, expensive stuff, because you can't afford buying it again.
Yeah. So, I mean, you talk about, and when you're there, you talk about the age of some of the product that you use. And I think I learned from just listening to you, like, you're not putting out 4-year stuff, you know, and no knock to anybody that is, because, I mean, obviously everybody's palate's different. They choose to produce and put out in a bottle what they want when they want. But you have kind of a different look at an outlook on it. And I think that that's important for people to know. So tell us about that. Like, what's your age range that you like?
So 7 is the minimum with bourbon. Nothing younger. Anything we have bottled so far, nothing younger than 7 and older.
And tell why.
There is science behind it. So when you distill the product and put it in a barrel, 75% of your flavor or whiskey flavor is coming from the barrel. So what do you think is happening there? Your distillate is going in, extracting all these compounds and chemical things that you have in your oak that you caramelized, and then you sit there slowly mellowing down. Well, most people will be like, well, we're drinking very mellow whiskey. What does mellow whiskey mean? It's like, why is it mellow? So the science behind it is you first grab your brand new charred oak that we're looking at it right now here, and you store your whiskey in it. In our case, it's bourbon. You put your bourbon in there, and the bourbon gets in the oak, dissolve all these molecules that the oak have to offer. And then you sit there, once you dissolve them, you have to sit there and bond them together into the molecules that you have in your distillate. So you have now a very slow chemical reaction trying to bond those molecules together. So when you drink 120 proof whiskey when it's 40 years old, it's very, very sharp and it's very harsh to drink. When it hits 7 to 8 year, people say, oh, it's actually mellow. Why is it mellow? Because the whiskey actually had plenty of time to interact with those new molecules you gain from the oak. And then through the oxidation process, you actually bonded those molecules together. So it's a very slow chemical reaction that doesn't happen if you speed up the heat or cool it down or do mechanical agitation, unless you have unlimited free energy. But typically, you have to let the whiskey sit there for good 6 to 7 years to let all those molecules bond together. And that's how you get that mellow whiskey that tastes much better than year 2 or 3 or 4. And 5 year or 7, a 7-year-old bourbon typically tastes much better than a 5-year-old.
So that barrel, you said you have a couple of barrels back there that are some of the older ones. Like I think you said 17 year. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So what's the plan with those? What's your outlook on those barrels?
So those are whiskey barrels. They're not bourbon.
Right.
So because they were aged in used barrels, they can actually sustain a little bit more aging. If you're talking about bourbon, if you talk to any expert in the bourbon industry, they will tell you past the 12-year mark, it's, unless you have a really specific climate in your warehouse and you know how to mature bourbon that long, you don't age bourbon past 12.
So I find what I like, my palate that I like the best is when I drink Evan Williams Master Blend, which has a 23-year whiskey. It's got the 13-year. It's got a percentage of an aged bourbon mixed with you know, regular. And so that is what always intrigues me, because when I tasted the 23, I thought there was a little bit too much oak. But that Master Blend that has that in there, plus the 13-year, and it's got those different ages, but then it's the blender that's doing that is making a really, like you said, there is, I believe, 6-year, you know, 6-year in there and whatever. But between all of them, that whiskey is, I would say it has, when I think of smooth or mellow, it's always about the spice or the bite that happens. And that one almost has the perfect amount of heat or spice, not a lot, but just a little bit on mid palate. And then at the back and how it just finishes like silk. And that is always a key. So I felt that in America, now that we're going further with this, and this has been that as we go, some of those, if you mix some of those higher end aged bourbons or whiskeys into your blend, you can, it's a flavor additive that even, you know, that you can't get from other whiskeys or bourbons. And I mean, I just think
I'm expecting a sample of that.
The Master Blend. I'll bring that down with me. I love that bourbon. I mean, it's so, just one of my favorite. And those are the kind of things that I'm getting into more and more. Don't get me wrong. I like single barrels. But single barrels are, you know, based off of just one barrel. It is what it is, right? And you can get a lot of those really nice barrels. But, you know, I don't find myself buying too many single barrels right off the shelf, because I'm just, you know, even to the point with Blanton's, I'm just not into the hit or miss anymore. You know, I think there's so
much. Blanton's is a way different single barrel than drinking straight from one barrel like this. That's not the same as what they're doing.
What do you mean? They empty one barrel at a time. They dump it and they put it in.
Yeah, it's different.
It's hit or miss. Now, what? You're right. Amin picks, when you're talking about Amin single barrels, that's not the same. He's hand selecting these particular barrels, and you're even talking about finished single barrels. That's a whole different thing.
In the whiskey, you know, whiskey industry. So it's whiskey industry. So it's whiskey industry. So it's whiskey industry. So it's very exciting to talk about it.
Find you, Amin, because obviously they could Google.
The hub of the bourbon industry. packing you down. We're just like word of mouth, very small, humble company. So.
Yeah.
Well, I have to give you props for.
Yeah.
Well, I have to give you props for.
Yeah.
Well, I have to give you props for a couple of things. People that follow us, things. If we put out that word, follow us, know. If we put out that word, follow us, know. If we put out that word, follow us, know. If we put out that word, follow us, know. If we put out that we're doing a
charity event for.
If we put out that we're doing a charity event for. Doing a charity event for Salvation Army for the kids for the
Salvation
season, the kids for, and in that event, the
Christmas
season, we're selling raffle tickets, and the money event, we're selling raffle tickets, and the money goes to the Salvation Army for those kids, 100% of it. And Andy, who made the chair and everything involved, is given to the program. But you were one of the first people, once I posted it, one of the first who said, yeah, I want some tickets. Give me some tickets. And I think that speaks volumes for you, for the bourbon industry as a whole, is that people, that we can all come together, and that this is more than just bourbon. It's friendship. It's being able to do some good in a way that, you know, we didn't always have maybe in your day job before, but now you have a chance to reach out and be involved more.
Absolutely, so, man.
Go ahead.
No, it's always a pleasure to be able to help.
So. Yeah, it's appreciated. I think it speaks volumes for you, your brand. I think that people need to, I'm a small business owner in the area I'm in, and I'm big on supporting local businesses and us supporting each other. So I think that that's the thing that I want people to understand, is that if you have the opportunity and you see a bottle of Old Louisville, give it a try. You won't be disappointed. And even though your product may come in at a $100 price point and they see something else that's more allocated at a similar price point, that they're probably going to find the flavors and what you do to be even above those allocated bottles. So definitely, as it becomes available in Ohio, or if you're traveling to Kentucky and you see it, it's something that you definitely want to pick up.
Thank you, Chris.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. So just tell us what you think, CT. You've been drinking on it all night. I mean, give us tasting notes.
I'm not even going to kid. We didn't even talk about the maple. We got sidetracked. But the maple, the one thing that I like about his maple, I mean, I'm sure you would agree. And I mean, this was not stuff that needed mashed over, but it actually got in. It did well with that maple syrup. So I'm enjoying that.
I'm enjoying that.
But again, you go and you get to sample this barrel.
Sample this barrel.
Or this barrel. Or you try those, and
you like
the people that were there when we were there. They can bottle their own and take it with them.
Bottle their own and take it with them.
He's got a whiskey thief again.
Oh, what's he doing? Oh,
he's telling on me. You're telling on me.
Well, I got to tell the people who are on audio that you're searching.
Hey, talking about something, I was like, well, I'm thirsty.
We didn't tell Tiny what Andy said when we were there. Andy said that he was going to get a whiskey thief for a wine barrel because it would be a couple inches longer.
I just pulled double oak, seven year. This is probably something we'll be hopefully duplicating because it's pretty amazing.
Is that the one we took up with the forklift?
Yes.
There you go.
Because they're like, well, we came last week. Like, what do you have new? I'm like, let me see.
We just brought this one down. That was a good bottle. That was a good barrel.
Yeah.
But that's you know, I think it goes through that there are so many, and I mean, my guy, I sit in this room, and there's hundreds of bottles of different bourbon in this room, and
bourbon in this room, and
good stories along with all of them.
Stories along with all of them.
I think the brand speaks volume for what you've put into it, and I'm excited for Jeff to try because I know Jeff has a palate. If he doesn't like it, he's going to tell you. There's nothing you have that he's not going to like because he and I share similarities. We don't like celery. We don't like dill pickle. And nothing you have has nothing of that sort. He's going to be amazed.
I better block my calendar than to drink with him on the 17th or him on the 16th.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. That sounds fun. I'll come and not leave.
I do have a forklift.
Yes, I know. And I actually have my own whiskey thief, so I'll bring that down there, you know, and we can, between the two of us, I'm sure we can extract some good whiskey out of those barrels.
Absolutely.
I think we were leaving four times, and it kept being, hey, what about being, have you guys tried this barrel? And then it ended with the fourth.
And I have a good friend of mine. You probably met him. But yeah, he will tell me. But yeah, come here to this warehouse. Here, and never leave this warehouse. Either hungry or sober.
Is he the one who had the cigars?
No, no, it's Sean. No, I think you met Sean.
Maybe.
He's like, I never leave hungry or sober around here.
And then there's cigars involved too.
Well, he had a friend from New York that has a cigar shop, didn't he?
He's actually, he picked a barrel from me, and he just launched a cigar brand called Noble Cigar. I'm not a smoker, but I gave cigars to a good friend of mine that he smoked cigars on a regular basis, and they were very good.
So...
He was such a nice guy that when we left, he was like giving Andy and I, listen, you love him to try. You love him to try. Asked us to, you know, try us.
You got cigars? And you didn't tell me?
But you took Andy's lighter, so he can't even light him.
I did not take Andy's lighter. I saved Andy's freaking lighter. It was on.
He texted me a minute ago, and he asked if you had a cutter.
Yeah, he asked me that, too. I said maybe there was a cutter involved. I don't remember.
He's home in bed now.
He's not joining. He should have.
He's driven all day. I'm gonna get him a pass on this one. But I drove all day yesterday. Yes, you did.
And my voice is gone, and I still showed up.
More bourbon. I worked all day and I drank all day.
And you're drinking all night too. It's like you're not unique in this way because I guarantee you somewhere there's a cot.
That's right.
And so we've talked to a lot of people with passion for making and blending whiskey, and blending that cot does exist in a lot of places.
Yeah. Well, right. Thank you guys for having me. Unless you have more questions for me or any other comments.
Yeah. That's fine. Thank you for coming on. We're the Scotchy Bourbon Boys. Thank you, CT, for joining us and also getting down to get. Onto the podcast, we really appreciate everything that you've done. Again, we're the Scotchy Bourbon Boys, www.scotchybourbonboys.com for all Scotchy Bourbon Boys thing. And then also make sure that you like, listen, subscribe, and leave good feedback on Apple Podcasts, also Spotify and iHeart, and then anywhere else you listen to. And don't forget to join our Facebook group, the Scotchy Bourbon Boys. Like our page, and then also follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. And with that, thank you, everybody. And little Stevo's going to take us out.
Cheers, guys.
Cheers. Yes, thank you very much. Yes, thank you very much.
Oh, really?
Oh, really?
Steve-O was going to take us out.
Steve-O. Oh, he is. I charged this. Oh, here we go. Come on. It's not Lincoln. All right, I'll have to.
I tell you we must die.
All right, everybody. Thanks. And till next time. All right, we're offline. And Amin has left. So.
Hey, Scotchy Bourbon Boys fans, this is Alan Bishop, Indiana's Alchemist of the Black Forest. So I'm tuning in here today to tell you all about the One Piece at a Time Distilling Institute channel on YouTube. If you're at all interested in the art of distilling, whether it be home distilling or professional distilling, and the intense geekery that goes into that process, then check out the One Piece at a Time Distilling Institute on YouTube. I promise you're going to learn something you didn't know before about the art.